Welcome to a podcast that's completely unnecessary for, right at the end of May almost.
No.
Tuesday, May 24th, my birthday month, 2022. That's Ian. I'm Pat.
I'm here.
On the show today, we'll be talking about, what are we talking about? A new ColecoVision. We'll be talking about Game Pass.
Yep.
Ian's got something to say about Game Pass. GameStop. Launching into the NFT world officially, coming soon. We're all excited about that, Ian, with a deep sigh. And a Q&A in a Patreon poll. We talked about Top Gun and the new release
coming out. Yeah, we did, for a surprisingly long amount of time. I mean, it's a movie I'm not even that fond of. But
I love Top Gun. Go to patreon.com/CU podcast if you want to hear us talk Top Gun and the sequel coming out. I think it comes out like today, like a Tuesday or something. It's weird.
Oh, really? That could be one of those Wednesday releases, so you might get nighttime viewings tonight. There you go. I don't know.
Other than that, Ian, you have a good weekend?
Yeah, I did. I played in another pinball tournament on Sunday. I did miserable. That was a humbling one. But I'm looking forward to the next one in 2 weeks regardless. Definitely played a lot of Playdate. I would say the week three games that just came out yesterday for me are some of the best I've played so far on the Playdate. So I'm still really enjoying that.
You should live stream you playing the tournament on Twitch.
That'd be
funny, right?
Yeah, maybe I should. Well, I would like to stream pinball someday, but I got to get a little bit better first. But other than that, it was a pretty chill weekend. That was about it.
I edited Flea Market Madness 46 almost all weekend. That's up now. You can watch it.
Nice.
Real congrats. Teaser. Congrats. Thanks.
Congratulations for finishing.
There's about six more to edit. People say, Pat, when are they going to end about? Whenever I get through the backlog, that's when they're probably going to end. There might be a recap. There might be like a finale episode or something. Because Frank doesn't tell me stuff. Frank gets recognized more than you possibly think, probably more than me and you. He tells you about, like,
oh, I'm sure,
where he's just working or walking around and he gets recognized and people are like do double takes and be like, oh, that's Frank, and like talk to him. Like he doesn't tell me that. It was like, yeah, I'm getting seen, you know, here and there, and I'm like, okay, you know, he's very, very unique look.
Yeah.
Everyone loves Frank.
He's easy to pick out of a crowd. He's got a unique voice. Unique look.
He could have been one of those character actors that showed up in cowboy films in the 50s. Like, he's always that guy. He's always like the drunk guy at the end. He was always that particular character. Like, that would have been Frank in like the 40s and 50s. He'd be hired to do all those little one-off little roles in these films.
I want to point out real quick about Frank. Not about Frank. Were you continuing with Frank?
Oh, go ahead, Ian.
Vonnie and I watched this movie over the weekend called Intruder.
Okay, that's a
yeah. I needed to make sure that I pointed out. Make sure you look up the 1989 one. It was a movie directed by Scott Spiegel, but it has a very brief cameo by Bruce Campbell in it.
Okay.
Sam Raimi plays one of the main characters, and so does Ted Raimi.
Okay.
And it's a horror movie that takes place in a grocery store overnight.
Great concept.
One of the best horror movies I've ever seen. Loved every minute of that stupid movie. It's very gory.
And they're locked into a
basically there's like they stay overnight. The grocery store that all these, you know, kids work at is being sold and closing down. So they have an overnight shift where they have to change all the prices during the overnight shift. And then stuff goes crazy from there. But it was fucking fantastic. I loved it. As far as like just picking a random movie and watching it, I couldn't have done better. It was so good.
It was random. What was it on?
It's on Shudder.
Oh, Shudder, is that a subscription?
Yeah, it's the horror movie subscription service. And honestly,
I know you're that big into horror movies.
I get into them like twice a year. I get into them, and I will use Shudder like heavily for a month, and then I'll go away. But yeah, I really have been able to watch a lot more horror movies lately.
When you said Intruder, for some reason I thought of the Informer song by Snow. Intruder, I'm going to do the market slashing. That's what I thought of, that Informer song from, that's like 30 years old already. Jesus.
But if you like the fun stuff, if you like, you know, if you like Sam Raimi and that sort of thing, it's well worth watching.
What was I saying? Yeah, Frank's getting recognized. Flea Market Madness is great. There was a little bit of drama in the video, real quick. As a spoiler, I got into it. There was an altercation I recorded between one of the sellers and an old lady, and it was really good. I'm glad I captured it.
Really?
On film. Nothing too bad, but it was funny. People are liking it. The She-Hulk TV trailer dropped. Dropped! Looks interesting. I have not seen Moon Knight yet. For some reason, something's telling me not to watch Moon Knight. Not that I won't enjoy it. I just don't have it in me right now. Plus, I'm still on Knight Rider. I'm on Knight Rider Season 1 getting through Knight Rider.
I really enjoyed Moon Knight. I did. I know it's kind of split people, but I thought...
Is it really?
I think Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke are fucking fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that alone. And I mean, I realize that probably helped me smooth over some of the things I maybe didn't like about it, was just that when you get those two on screen at the same time... especially, and this is not like a huge spoiler, when you get them on the screen at the same time and Oscar Isaac is doing the two characters, it's fucking great.
They raise the material, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's watching them is fantastic. So all the lesser scenes, it's worth it for that stuff.
It's almost like I want to see it because I know almost nothing about the character. So it'd be interesting to see that.
It's an interesting take on the character.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then, She-Hulk will be fun because it'll be light. I think more lighthearted. And plus, from the news, is that like since she's a lawyer, she'll be defending, superheroes. So you'll get a chance to see like these C grade, D grade heroes that and villains that probably show up for like one comic randomly. And so like I think someone says like there's a character called like Frogman that's supposed to be appearing. It's like, a goofy ass character. Someone just goes in a frog suit. It's like, so that's fun. That sounds fun.
I'm really into the law aspect of it. Like I think that stuff will be fun.
Yes, I think it's gonna be fun. And the actress is great. She was on that the show where she played four different characters that everyone loved. Something Orpheus Black, or that's what it was called.
Oh, okay. Never
even heard
of it.
Four different characters about clones, and she plays like four distinctly different versions of herself. Never
okay.
heard of that?
No.
Yeah, that's why she got big. That's why she probably got cast.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. That was a BBC show. How about that? You don't. You never heard of that show, really?
Black Orpheus. No, that's a 1959 film.
It's something with Orpheus in it, I think. That's what it was. Was it Orpheus Black? I remember I watched a couple episodes, and I'm like, this is pretty damn cool. Pretty damn cool.
That's pulling up a 1959 movie.
All right.
I think it's a little off, but I'll look it up later.
Okay. She-Hulk. This is what I was saying about the trailer. It looks entertaining. Mark Ruffalo's in it. Everyone's telling me more and more I look like Mark Ruffalo. I think it's just the hair. But what's interesting is that it's going to fulfill some of the fantasies, especially like, I remember the one last time we used to do like the top searches on Pornhub.
Yeah.
And one of them was like Amazon. Or like giant women, and I'm like, what? That's a thing? And it's a whole weird subgenre where they like tilt the camera up to make the women look bigger and stuff. I'm like, this is fucking weird. So that's fulfilling fantasy, because in the trailer, she's a big muscular dude she's like carrying around ready to have sex with, like just toting the guy around like he's a child. Orphan Black.
Yes, Orphan Black.
That's it. And from what I said, Tatiana Maslany. Yeah, that was a good show, even though I never really watched it. The BBC stuff I used to watch by accident. So, Doctor Who's on, I'll watch an episode. I'm like, now I remember each time I watched Doctor Who, why I really don't get into Doctor Who, because the stories are usually super silly, and I'm like, I can't get into this. But something like that is the BBC usually puts out good stuff, Ian. People like Luther. Remember Luther?
I don't.
You never saw Idris Elba's Luther?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yes.
Yeah, people like that stuff. And then Daredevil's coming back. Arguably Daredevil's the best MCU thing ever to me. Like it's the most faithful,
very good,
most faithful to a character and how the tone should be and like how, so that's coming back. It's going to be a Disney-fied version, but it'll still be good. From what I hear, it's going to be like a sequel series. Like there's weird stuff with the contracts with the Netflix where it's like, we can't do a direct sequel, but it's fine. And then the horrible side of news, Stan Lee's likeness sold to Disney. So the estate of Stan Lee did a license deal for Stan Lee's name and likeness for use in future movies. I thought we got away from the cameos, finally. TV, theme parks, VR, and merchandising through digital technology, archival footage, and other
Yes, forms. VR. The VR Stan Lee experience. I can't wait.
I guess they'll have him like walk you through a museum of Marvel history at a theme park or what have you.
I think you're shooting for the moon with that.
It's a 20-year deal, according to the Hollywood Reporter. Hollywood Reporter, you're fast and backlog news. We're going to see this more and more because now we have the technology to do this more. It started with, you know, the hologram Tupac and Michael Jackson concerts the past
even
years.
Before that, they used to bring him probably my favorite actor. I brought it up in the bonus episode, but Philip Seymour Hoffman, they the last of the Hunger Games movies,
yeah, they digitally
basically
put him
just CG'd him in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, digitally put him in there.
I mean, but at least that makes sense because he was supposed to be in the movie.
Sure.
This is
I'm just saying the technology.
Yeah, the technology's been there. I mean, I think it even goes back further than that. The Russell Crowe Gladiator.
Oh, okay.
The Emperor, the Caesar guy. God, not Caesar guy. He passed away, and they had him digitally put into shots, and that was like 20 years ago already. Jesus Gladiator, Christ. Holy shit!
Yeah,
more than that. So it's been around. So it's obviously becoming better and better. That they did it in Rogue One with God, the old British actor who played Grand Moff Tarkin. And that was like to mixed results.
Oh, sure.
I mean, obviously they did it in good old Tron Legacy, and that looked horrible back then. The technology was not there yet to do young
Bridges.
Yeah, young Jeff Bridges. But we're going to see this more and more. I guess what it comes down to is like, are people going to be acceptable seeing all these dead actors doing this stuff?
I don't want it
for like. You know what I mean? For
the Cushing.
Peter Cushing. Yes.
I know. I don't want to see it, and it, you know, I hate to make this weird. Lateral, this weird comparison, but I don't, because it's, you're going to end up with what you've got today in pro wrestling. You're going to have people relying constantly on these old actors, and you're not going to bring up a fresh new class of actors, and you need that, otherwise everything's going to stagnate and get stale. I really don't want to see people who are dead thrown back into movies as a, you know, a lifeless CG puppet.
I mean, you're going to have, you know, Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible 17, right. Probably. I mean, he still looks pretty young.
He might be the only guy that it makes sense for, because he's a fucking robot to begin with. I mean,
he's a robot.
So, I mean, actually, that's fine. You can continue the Tom Cruise brand after he dies. That makes some sense to me.
Well, Tom Cruise basically has his own production company, does his own thing. So maybe for that, it makes sense where he's like, yeah, I'm running the show. I want Top Gun 3 to be made 35 years from now again, when everyone's dead who saw the original one. I want to do it.
Right. And make sure I do a crazy stunt.
The I Am Jesus Christ video game, which we brought up a couple times before.
Yes.
Here. It's still not out yet. The first person Jesus Christ simulator. And this company we've talked about before, this company, they're in Poland, Eastern Europe.
Simulam. Developer Simulam is the name.
Oh, but the publisher is.
Oh, the publisher is different. Yeah,
the publisher publishes. I mean, I get sent the codes. Playway, good old Playway.
All sorts of sim games for stuff that you would not expect there to necessarily be a sim game for.
They have like sim mechanic. They have sim like junkyard. They have sim. The one controversial one was a bum simulator. They have a bunch of these that. I think so. Some of them get really good reviews.
Yes.
People get into them. So they've cornered this like weird simulator market. So now they're using ahead of one of the major religions of the world to do this game. Blasphemous probably to a lot of people. But at first, the first trailer was like, oh, we're going to like heal people and do things like that. And now he's fighting, Jesus fighting zombies.
Yeah.
Every game naturally gets to the progression of fighting zombies.
Yes. That's why we're talking about it. The new I Am Jesus Christ gameplay shows Jesus fighting demons. And they look very zombie-ish.
Okay. Great. Great. So... this is from the Steam page. Are you prepared to fight with Satan in the desert? He didn't fight with Satan in the desert. He was tempted by Satan.
No, they threw down. They had a fucking five-knuckle shuffle in the middle of the desert. Just brutal.
The sword fight in the desert.
No punches pulled.
Cure the sick. Okay. And help the needy. Perform over 30 iconic miracles, from the feeding of the 5,000 and healing lepers to the calming of the sea and giving sight to the blind. That sounds really, that's like a religious game. That sounds reasonable. That's Bible teachings. And then I guess for going that to fighting off zombies and demons, that's where it's like, okay, I don't remember that in good old Mark or Luke.
Magic bolts coming from his hand.
There was that first-person shooter where like you fought demons as an angel in the 90s. Remember that one? I remember downloading it, never playing it.
I don't, but I mean, I believe you. That sounds like something.
Yes, That was they were popular for like 2 months, all those first person shooters.
You know what else is really popular? UltimateNintendo.com.
Is it in?
Yeah. It's popular with all the kids. You can go and get stuff. Twitch Wednesday nights, click the join button to subscribe.
That's why I don't let you do it, Ian. You got RBI baseball stickers at Ultimate Nintendo. You got the NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks. You have the enamel. We're down to like 9 or 8 enamel CU podcast pins. We have the Pat Pixel pins and more at UltimateNintendo.com. And yes, I will be on Twitch
tomorrow.
TV says Contracode on Wednesday, and I'm on Cameo. Cameo.com/PatContra. I'll also be at Too Many Games a month from now.
Too Many Games.
And Oaks games. PA. I'll be returning there a month from now. I'm excited to do that with some books in tow. You see about this Mario Kart tournament coming?
Yeah, just now, actually. This one sneaked by me on the docket. But Nintendo announced you can race to the top 8 in the Mario Kart North American Open June 2022 tournament starting 6-3. Go for the gold in 3 days of tournament, place in the top 8. Win 2,500 My Nintendo Gold points. That's $25.
You win $25,
yep,
in essence.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nintendo.
I would definitely... I will probably play in this. I've been playing a lot more Mario Kart lately. I say that all the time. I just play Mario Kart all the time. But I've been really, really bad lately. So maybe I can dust off the skills.
So there's tournament codes for each day. I guess you input that in the game, then it'll load you up, and then they'll put you into different brackets, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Is it okay?
You can sign into tournaments, and then you race your races.
Here's the legal ease. No purchase necessary. They always got to say that so that you can like send in a self-addressed stamp envelope to Nintendo to people. I love that they still do that. No purchase necessary. That's always the thing about it.
Yep.
Like no purchase necessary. You know.
I wonder if a no purchase necessary person has ever won. And that probably really pisses off the company because you're getting the shit, but you buy a fucking thing from me.
Canada, you got to be 13 plus. Mexico, 18 plus. That's it. And I guess the U.S., I have no idea. It's not on here. What are the details for that? It's fun to do it. I mean, you got the DLC. They're trying to pump that up. That's going to come out. When's that coming out in the DLC on that? The new DLC?
New DLC. Well, we already had some of it.
Oh, we did already?
We got the first four. I talked about them on here. But I would imagine if they had 8 packs to do and they were going to do 2 years, I would say that's every 3 months.
So
we should have one soon because it was March, April, May. We're probably getting some in June.
Mario Kart 8 Deluxe 0.5, basically. 8.5.
When you load it up now, it actually says 2.0 at the bottom.
It says 2.0. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they're well into the 2 aspect of this.
And on the negative side of Nintendo news, the Saudis now own 5% of Nintendo.
Yeah, not exciting. I know some people snarkily asked what I would do about it because I mentioned that I mean,
they're buying stock. There's not much you can do.
I don't watch, you know, the wrestling, and I don't SNK. I'm not currently playing. There's a difference between a 5% investment and basically owning the company.
Yes.
So that's why I'm at right now. And I mean, we'll see what happens. And like I said, when I brought that up, I don't actually think I'm better. Everyone picks and chooses their own battles.
Sure.
You make your decisions based on how you feel. And, you know, that's it. That's all we can do.
Yeah, obviously to diversify, you know, the investment in different things besides just, you know, oil and gas and getting into tech makes sense to, you know, to modernize an economy to do that. But obviously, you know, we're not really fans of the regime there, the
monarchy. Absolutely not. No,
We're not really fans of that. But you don't have to worry about them buying out Nintendo. I don't think that's gonna.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna escalate quite the same as SNK did.
No,
you know, a small company that was probably ripe for
plus
the takeover.
Yeah, they'll be fine. You want to talk about this versus PS Plus thing real quick? This is really weird. So. Sony's, remember this problem, one of the many problems with the PlayStation Mini, the classic, was the fact that for some reason they put PAL ROMs on the thing instead of North American ROMs, NTSC ROMs, which screwed with the frame rate going from 60 to 50. So you're playing slower games, you know, not the experience you're used to. Well, it turns out Sony did it again. They're doing it again on PS Plus.
Yeah, they're doing it with PS Plus. I mean, you know, this thing that they've, you know, they've created 3 tiers for, and it's supposed to be, it's supposed to be their big competition with Microsoft Game Pass. And I have my issues with Game Pass, but this is not a good Not a good look. And some people say it's because, well, they're doing it because some of the Pale games already have, you know, multiple language selections. Mm-hmm. So some people think that's why they're doing it. But honestly, Sony, I mean, it could just as much be the fact that they're fucking lazy.
Can you give me the choice to do the ROM? Like if I grew up in Europe with the 50 hertz one, because that's what I had, like, give people the choice. Be like, oh, which version you want to play? You want to play the PAL one? Can you do that? Like, is that a big deal? I don't know.
Right. I hate it. And then something that I caught this morning and I didn't put on there. But according to reports from Asian players who have access to the new PlayStation Plus, if you got your subscription at a discount, you'll be charged a higher fee to make up for the discount. So they won't let you use. Yeah, Sony just being fucking gross. Also, stacked subscriptions must pay for the upgrade for the entire sub duration.
God, welcome to the subscription world. Welcome to the digital subscription world.
Gross, man. Disgusting. I don't like it.
No, sir, I don't like it.
No, sir, I don't like it.
This was announced on Atari Age. I've looked into this a little bit, but not a huge amount. I'm not familiar with this person developing a new Atom computer system. So it's an emulation Atom ColecoVision system running on on new hardware, but it's an emulator system. So the way this is explained to me and the way it looks like, this is basically like a Retron 5 or Polymega, but for ColecoVision. That's basically what's being developed.
Right, and it will be able to support Atom, ColecoVision, and then not just others. ColecoVision, also the MSX 1 and 2, which is kind of like a home computer. So it was kind of like a video game heavy home computer system in Japan.
Yes.
Like the Atom. So they actually do kind of feel like they fit together.
So, I mean, the good news is that I looked into this guy on his website. He does hardware projects. So, like, and I think there's on this thread, he's already ordered boards for this. So this looks to be something that'll be produced in some capacity and get to people.
Yes.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, too. Look, this is a very clearly a hobbyist project.
Yeah.
Dude's not promising the moon. He's got some background in it. It's not pie in the sky. Seems like it should work. And if it doesn't, you know, we'll call it out. But I do want to say, I understand people like the Amico stuff, but we got to stop calling everything a scam. Because we've had, like, when something was pointed to us, when this point, I was like, oh, the next retro video game scam?
We'll see first.
We'll see. We'll see. Scam has a definition. It actually means something.
Yeah, we defined it on the podcast.
Right.
So to be sure.
So we got to see. Yeah. And of course, we'll call it out if it is, but I don't think there's any reason to think this is at this point.
No.
It looks like a hobbyist thing that's going to be popular with, you know, maybe a couple hundred people.
Yeah, they'll make 100 of them or 200 of them.
Yeah.
And if people get
people
money,
will review them. And
yeah, if this guy takes money and doesn't ship them, then we'll call him out. It's located in Belgium. I don't know much other stuff he's done, but it, so far, knock on wood, it looks like something that some people will enjoy. I'll just say this, though. This goes back to my just saying about, like, why does this exist?
Sure, of course.
It's an emulation system.
Right. I feel like if this was FPGA, you would definitely be targeting that group that we talked about. Emulation, I think it's going to be a tougher sell because the hardcore would probably rather have FPGA, and the people who are fine with emulation aren't necessarily going to be interested in this.
Or if I'm super into ColecoVision, I would probably pay someone to HDMI mod my, you know, ColecoVision.
Sure, but
possible, like do something like that. Like,
it wouldn't do all of this, but again, like we said, it's emulation. So
yeah, it's gonna pull the ROM into memory and play it.
I think it looks cute. I like the mock-up of it.
Looks like a server rack sort of thing.
It's kind of nice looking. I like the compact design. I mean, it really is compact when you look at the picture of it with the ColecoVision cartridge it's really small.
So it's gonna have it's gonna have the traditional ports on there and also USB on there as well.
Certainly better designed than another system that's never coming out.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ian.
No one does.
Possibly. No one does.
No one knows what I'm talking about.
Ian.
Yeah.
Game Pass is in the news.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons.
yes.
I saw you tweet in somewhat in frustration or anger about a Kotaku article.
Yeah, I was really talking kind of about frustrated
burnout,
about
but there's been a bits come out. So where do you want to start on this?
Well, let's start with the executive and his concerns about it, because I think they're valid concerns.
This is from videogameschronicle.com. Former Xbox exec says he's scared of Game Pass's potential impact. Ed Fries compares the service's potential impact to Spotify's people just don't buy songs anymore, meaning that people won't buy games anymore.
I think right now with Game Pass, there are people who are very upset about, things like games leaving the system or leaving the service. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think that's, kind of in there is like a failsafe to make sure people do still buy games. But I think there's a lot of people, I think, and I'm one of them, that would be okay with it. It's a constant rotating selection of games, a good variety of indie and AAA. I think there are, for some people, it will be plenty. Just like there are definitely people who love music, go out and buy music, purchase music, even keep MP3s or buy digital albums and organize them on their computer. But there's a lot of people who, for them, music is fine. It's just Spotify. Streaming what's on there. So I don't know that it's going to, kill retail sales, but I think it will end up, I think these subscription services will get to a point where they are enough for a certain type of gamer.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what I'd have to say about that. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I don't think it's necessarily going to be like music where, it really is a true replacement. But I think, like I said, for some people it would be.
Well, songs are easier to sort of hold on to and sure. grasp. They're much obviously smaller in size. You could play songs on on anything. You download a song, you can play it on a computer, you can play it on any device. Games are a bit more complicated, obviously, because you need the platform for
right.
it. You need the tech for that. So it's not quite the same. But I see Ed's point here about it. It's like, if you're getting AAA games. Remember, I was first confused about it. I was like, there's no way they're putting, there's no way Microsoft's putting AAA games that are brand new on the game page. Like, oh, yeah, they are, Pat. I'm like, my head got blown. I'm like, that's so weird to me to think about. Imagine.
Well, it happens less now, I think, because people are realizing it doesn't make a lot of money. But, they do. There are AAA games that come out whenever the Bethesda games eventually sure. come out that were delayed. Those will be day one releases on
Game because look Pass. What the only parallel we have to movies with this happening was remember during the pandemic with HBO Max. You had stuff saying, oh, we're going to come out with the Godzilla movie at the same time and come out. But that's not sustainable. You can't make those movies like that and make up the cost unless you release them in theaters. You just can't do it long term. It's just
right.
impossible.
But even though they are yeah. back to doing that, it's a much shorter period. It only took like 3 weeks for the Batman to get on HBO Max.
Sure.
Which I did watch, by the way. It was pretty good.
But they're calculating that in. They're like, we're going to make our money
yes.
up front. Because that did well. That's like the second grossing movie this year. Highest grossing. Then Doctor Strange, I think, knocked it off. So maybe that's the way they're going to do it. They'll just be like, oh, you got to buy it in the first 3-4 months, our new games, and then if you don't want to wait, or then it'll come afterwards. We're going to get the bulk of the money up front, and then obviously, who knows with DLC. But so that was an interesting little take on that. But there's a Kotaku article that I think you disliked.
This rubbed me the wrong way, and I don't want to come across as too much of an asshole, but I think
no one ever accused us of that.
Yeah, I really think people need to think about what they're saying when they're bitching about things and services. So where is it? Here it is. Kotaku put out an article called After Years of Hype, the Xbox Game Pass Burnout is Here. One, when you go through the article, it doesn't really seem to be based on any real research.
Okay.
It seems to be based on a couple of tweets that they cherry picked and decided that they needed to write an article about it. Must have been a slow news week. Tom's Guide writer Tony Polanco said in a tweet, okay, well, I guess that means everyone must be burning out then, right? And they go in and they talk about how, basically last year, especially with Halo, it got people interested in Game Pass because, you got this day one, AAA title released on there for something that you're already paying $14 a month for. So uh-huh. it seemed like a great deal. But now they're talking about, how the lack of AAA games is basically making it less exciting. To go to my tweet, I'll repeat it.
I don't have your tweet in front of me.
But I said, I don't think people think about what an asshole they sound like when they say this stuff. So many of these folks pretend to care about indie developers and games, but show their whole ass when it comes to money. Just say, I don't think your games are worth anything. And it's not just Kotaku. all of these websites really want to tout the indie developer, the person doing it, the good way, the old fashioned
pull
way.
Pull up by your bootstraps.
Pull up by the bootstraps, making games. They love to talk about all the conferences and indie game conventions and meetups and conferences and things like that. Mm-hmm. But as soon as that's what you're getting for your money instead of AAA shit, no one wants to fucking pay for it anymore. And there's a lot of good AAA game or indie games that come out on Xbox Game Pass. And it's $14 a month. For instance, one of the ones that I've really been looking forward to is called Floppy Nights, I think.
Floppy Nights. Okay. Yeah.
It's like a card-based like deck builder game. It's got the same artist from Dicey Dungeons, which is one of my favorite games of all time. And it's normally a $20 game. I can play it on Game Pass. I've already paid the $15 for it. Okay. And that's not the only game that's coming out this month. I feel like it's weird to me because if I were to get my shit together and come out with an indie game streaming service that rotated through developers and gave you a great selection of indie games, and I called it, I don't know, Indie Stream or something like that, and charged $15 for it, I have a feeling that the very same people who are complaining would laud it as this, great investment that's, great for developers.
So they're falsely, and it's like this article pointed out, someone else from Washington Post shared a similar sentiment on Twitter saying, I'm unsubscribing from Xbox Game Pass, Gene Park. I'm unsubscribing from Xbox Game Pass for the first time ever. Got to admit to myself, I barely use it and barely have use for it now. I'll be back. But for now, there's no point. Maybe there's no time to play those games. I get that. But sure. is there people that expected that I'm going to be getting all these new?
I think it's a matter of, and this is why, like I said, I'm not trying to be an asshole, but it does piss me off when people don't think about this. It's a matter of expectations that were not meant.
They expected every month, a $67 AAA game to be ready to go.
Not realizing that if you play these indie games that you so love to talk about, there's a great value here.
What's the number of games? There's a few hundred games Game Pass?
It's a few hundred games.
And that includes, obviously, older AAA games as well.
Sure.
So there's AAA games, just not new ones. Yeah.
And so there is, I just, like I said, you love this stuff when it's opportune, but then you shit all over it. Whether you meant to or not, you take a big steaming fucking dump all over it by saying that Game Pass isn't worth it because there's not enough AAA.
So you don't like that. You're basically disrespecting all these.
Yeah, I feel
all the small.
When it comes down to it, yes, I feel like
the medium sized titles.
It's very disrespectful to the indie developers that you supposedly love. And I say here too. I realize that tasting games is subjective. You can totally hate it because there's not enough AAA stuff on there. But don't say the service is crap because of it. There's plenty of people who would love it for that reason.
So
I wouldn't subscribe to it if it wasn't for getting to try a bunch of indie games. And the big thing is, it translates to sales for me too, and I'm sure other people, because when I play these indie games for free on Game Pass, I oftentimes buy a lot of them on the Switch so I can take them with me.
You can come a little closer. You're kind of falling off now. You can move your laptop back. There you go. Sorry, buddy. So that's where you took offense to it. It's a fact that, like,
I feel like it's disrespectful to the indie game developers.
So you think that almost like the AAA title should be like almost like a bonus versus this is not the meat and potatoes of this service. This is not the reason I'm getting
it. It's unsustainable if it's not just a bonus.
That's what someone like I saw there was from Adam Ruins Everything. Adam Conover brought this up a few months ago, saying like this is going to be. I think he walked by a little bit. He basically said like this is going to like potentially ruin the video game industry because of that point where it's like you can't make these games anymore because like you're not gonna have people, there's no support group anymore if you go to straight subscription. There's not enough money being put into the system.
So I will admit that it could be bad for the business. I also admit that Game Pass, I'm not trying to defend Game Pass here, I'm trying to defend the indie developers. That's basically what I'm going for here. Game Pass has problems and it could be disruptive to the industry, and honestly I have no idea how much money indie developers are actually making off their games on Game Pass. I hope they make a decent amount.
Sure.
But fucking think about what you say.
Yeah. I guess the closest thing to this, I mean, I don't have to bring it up now. I'll admit it. I don't really play the games, but I still have the $5 a month Apple game, basically their Game Pass. And it's a brilliant subscription service. It's like the high-end quality.
It's a throwaway amount of money for a subscription. Yes. And when I do want to use it, I'm very happy I have it.
because these are like curated high quality app games.
I do feel like the releases though for Apple Arcade have certainly dropped off, but there's still a good amount of games to play there if I need something quick.
Yeah. And it's fine. So I think that's, unfortunately, we're in a subscription world now where it's no longer, you know, I pay $100 for cable, which was awful, $120 because you didn't have a choice. And now it's, well, I have 17 subscription services now, which is well more than $120 a month.
Fuck games as a service. It's life as a service.
Basically, that's what you become. You have a DoorDash subscription, which I have. You have that. You have your TV. You have your movies. You can have a music one. You can have your horror movies. You can have your games. And so there's going to be a pull and take to this system. But yes, you're right. It's not sustainable to have. You cannot basically give away games that cost tens of millions or hundreds of million dollars for free. You can't give them away.
Right.
It's just, you just can't do it.
No, again, there's issues with it. That's not what I'm defending. Not defending Game Pass, just the games that are on there.
And then did you look at this Vice article at all?
No, I did not.
One dev's Xbox struggle showed how Game Pass is already changing games.
Right. So here it is, another example of maybe this isn't great for the indie devs that are on there. I did look at this a little bit, but something I did not know. I don't know that as much, but basically there's a problem with updating the game because of Game Pass. All right, it's not going to be on Game Pass. We heard all of you who played Fury on Xbox, and we understand your frustration trying to explain why it's skipping Xbox. We are a small indie team, and we couldn't find the time and budget to make the port. So I guess you've got to port it.
Sure.
Got to do a special
port. So they need the money per sale to make it worth it.
Sure.
You can't just do all this work on it and just whatever, put on Game Pass, and whatever amount of money they would get for licensing it, you know, wouldn't make sense. You have to make a choice. This is a cult game. There's only 12 people on the team. They don't have a publisher, it looks like.
I heard it's good. I think Alex really liked that game.
They said Fury on Xbox was selling less and less, and were under a third of sales on Switch, so they basically have to pick their battles on updating it. So there you go. Says, unfortunately, the quote to them was, let's see, we talked to the team at Xbox to see if there's a way to get some support, but Fury didn't align with the Game Pass strategy, focused on new titles. This is why we took the decision to not bring the DLC to Xbox at launch. The chances the investment was not going to recoup were high. And unfortunately, without Game Pass, it is also very hard for many indie games to be visible on Xbox. So that's another issue that I think about. So if you're not on Game Pass as an indie developer, is that going to hurt you, like in the search or the algorithm or being featured? Is that a strike against you going forward? So that's kind of scary. So it's a double-edged sword where, hey, if you're an indie game, you get picked up for Game Pass, maybe Microsoft throws you some bucks. That's pretty good. But if you can't do that, or are you now hurt from the outset on that platform?
Yeah.
That is kind of scary, to think about that. Well, it's interesting, Ian. I don't know which way this is going to go, but when you have entertainment now as a service, people think about it in a different way versus one-off experiences.
Yep.
And that's kind of what people like, you know, Scorsese were warning about with like movies and entertainment, where it's like, now it's content. It's just, we need more content just to put it out. We need more content. So the experience kind of changes in and of itself, going from creator to consumer. It's just altered forever. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Dr. Squatch. Dr. Squatch is changing personal care with high performance, natural products that smell amazing and will have you feeling and looking your best. Dr. Squatch products are made using only the finest ingredients Mother Nature has to offer. They're transparent about their ingredients and their production. In fact, all of their products are at least 98% natural in origin. They never use any harsh chemicals or harmful ingredients, and all of their scents are naturally derived.
You may not expect it from a scruffy fellow like me, but I love shower products, and these are amazing. Dr. Squatch soaps set themselves apart with fresh and energizing smells. Some of them include like bay rum, pine tar, alpine sage.
This smells so nice. I took a shower with this Ian last night. It was the best I've smelled in forever. I wanted to go into a forest and just commune with the woodchucks and the deer.
I used the pine tar last night, and it was tough to get me out of the shower. Some of their soaps have added grit to help you feel even cleaner by providing an energizing, exfoliating experience. For instance, the pine tar I used really had some grit in there, and you could really feel clean after using it. We received soap. We got some shampoo that was fantastic to use.
Look at this hair.
Hair feeling clean.
Got the conditioner going on in here. It was great.
Deodorant, the soaps, everything has been fantastic. The soap lathers finishes up really nice, rich and creamy. Dr. Squatch uses all natural ingredients you can actually pronounce. I mean, if you look at the back of the box here, it's got olive oil, sustainable palm, coconut, some shea butter, and then some fragrances. That's really about it. There's nothing strange here. And no harsh chemicals means it's great for someone like me with sensitive skin. I actually have a real tough time using a lot of other soaps. I got out of the shower yesterday after using the Dr. Squatch. My skin wasn't red. I had no irritation or itchiness. Dr. Squatch is sustainably sourced, so you can feel good about making it part of your showering routine.
Ah, if you want to smell like a champion, click the link below and use our code DSQCUPOD to get 20% off any order over $20. You're welcome. Get yourself some Dr. Squatch and get yourself clean. Ian, GameStop is in the news. Good old GameStop.
Oh, boy.
The meme stock darling of 2021 is back in the news.
I just want to say that GameStop is always extremely late to the party.
Yeah. I mean, like, they should have got on board, you know, a digital game marketplace. I don't know. At least 14 years ago, they could have probably still been, you know, active, you know, there. But now we thought erroneously that the Chewy guy that took over the company was and touting NFT technology. We stupidly thought that a game company would want to do an NFT marketplace and tie NFTs to the blockchain for digital game sales, for buying and selling.
Right.
We're like, that's what it has to be, right? GameStop is buying and selling a game.
Which you still don't need NFTs for, but at least it would have made some...
It's with the brand.
It would have made sense.
It's in the brand. Some way. We thought that's what makes sense. Oh, no, no, no.
No, hell no.
We're too stupid.
No, they just want to be another OpenSea. They just want to be another exchange.
Ian and I think like poor people. We want to stay poor, as the crypto NFT bros say.
Stay poor.
Stay poor. GameStop is just opening an NFT marketplace. They're investing over $100 million into this, hundreds of millions of dollars. They want an NFT marketplace, and it's coming by the end of July. It's launching its own self-custodial Ethereum digital wallet. I'm starting to get shrinkage just from saying that.
I mean, it's hilarious. How can you not laugh when, I mean, we had the articles a month ago coming out and talking about how there's a 95% drop off. And here's GameStop with their fucking dick hanging out, showing up, being like, hey, it's time to put out these NFT wallets.
Crypto crashed. NFT crashed probably harder than that. And now you have this, basically all the money or a chunk of the money from the meme stock increase, take that cash out to do something. Out of all the things you could have done, reinvest in your stores, try to do a digital game storefront in some aspect. You know that it's too late for that. At least it would make sense. We're going to take all that money and shit it away on something that's derided by the vast majority of people who think it's stupid and pointless, and it's mostly for grifting and scamming. And even in the pop culture, it's already gone. Like there's nothing left with it. It's had its day in the sun, and that was for the most part last year.
Yeah,
it's done.
Right,
it's fucking done.
There's zero reason for fucking GameStop to be doing this right now, except for the fact that they were probably slow. And like I said, the seeds of this idea. I mean, it did because we've been bringing this up for a while. The seeds of the idea came right before the peak, and they have just taken way too long. They're not gonna catch any of that wave.
Sure. So the issue now, though, is that they, in order to make this a success, Ian, they're gonna have to spend a lot of advertising, marketing dollars to not just capture the dwindling, NFT, whatever you want to call them, consumer base. They're going to have to now advertise this shit to the current GameStop customers. So this is going to go down a path where you're going to see, you think people don't like this idea now, Ian. Imagine now when you walk into a GameStop, they're going to be throwing this shit at you and just saying, oh, by the way, we got a new NFT for a game coming out. The game's coming out, but now you can buy the NFT. They're going to try to probably work out similar deals how they did with remember when you had like, oh, the exclusive DLC at GameStop?
Yeah.
Imagine now the exclusive NFT deals they're going to try to do with game companies.
Absolutely. And GameStop has gotten pretty desperate, and I don't hold it against the people who work there. It's not they choose. But you know how GameStop used to always try to get you with the, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? There were a few years there where they were kind of hands off about it. Mm-hmm. I went in there the other day to buy a copy of Switch Sports, and I must have been asked if I like, it felt like 30 fucking questions. Do you want to do this? Do you want to do this? Do you need this guarantee? Yeah. Do you want to pre-order this? Do you want to get on the card? And like I said, really, no shade or hatred to the people just doing their job, but the GameStop higher ups have lately, they've really started telling people to force that shit down their throat. It's going to be insufferable with NFTs. You think they're not going to do that with NFTs? They absolutely are.
Especially since they're investing, like I said, $100 million at least. They're doing it. It's a $100 million fund toward grants to artists who make NFTs for GameStop's marketplace. They're doing that, but also all the money investing into this tech and getting this going. And then, like I said, advertising and marketing this shit. This is going to be an absolute, not just a nightmare because the fact that no one really wants it. They're going to be forced to spend good money after bad.
Yes.
On this in order to say, to prop this up and to say, well, this is the main direction our company was going over the past, whenever, I think a year ago we first heard about it, like last summer they sort of like dropped that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
When NFTs were like the new hotness still. And now,
that's what I'm saying. Like yeah. they started talking about this a long time ago.
Yeah, I think it was like July of last year, August.
They dragged their feet way too long.
So this is more details about this. So this self-custodial wallet, this is from the CNET article. Good old CNET, still kicking. Only gives the user access to the private digital key needed to access the wallet. The key is not stored anywhere else, which means that users don't have to rely on an intermediary like Robinhood or PayPal to buy and sell cryptocurrencies and NFTs. So it's super private. I don't know what happens. You lose that digital key, you're fucked. But, it's super private there. And I guess that means, I don't know, you're less susceptible to hacking. I have no idea how that works. They're partnering with blockchain startup Immutable X to create their marketplace. Like I said, they have this $100 million fund they're doing on top of whatever other investment they're doing. So they're blowing already $100 million on that. So who knows what the total they're blowing. But again, this money is not going to be – it's not going to get recouped. I will bet. This money is not getting recouped.
Absolutely not.
This is blown money. And blown money in, how many zeros is that? Nine digits of blown money. Nine digits? Eight digits. Nine's a billion. Eight digits of blown money. Is it eight zeros?
No, nine digits is still millions.
Oh, so 100 million?
Yeah, okay. 999,999,000.
Right. Nine digits of blown money. There you go. Instead of dollars, the fund will pay artists in Immutable's own cryptocurrency. There you go. You're going to help pump a crypto, too, while you're at it, GameStop. You're going to help pump the fucking crypto on top of it, which has declined significantly in value over the last year. So now, Ian, okay, this is what's so great about crypto. What's so great about crypto is that I don't think anyone's even trying to say it's a currency anymore, because you can't have a currency that wildly...
That's that volatile.
That one day is worth 50% more or less than the day before. It's not a currency anymore.
It seems like every fucking attempt at making it stable or a stable coin is a mess.
So what is this called? IMX, that they're going to base this whole economy on. It's dropped from... end of March, it was at 250. Now it's struggling to reach a dollar. So that's a drop, pat math, of like, what is that? Two-thirds? It went down like 60 to 70%, something like that.
Jesus.
That's nuts. And this is the sort of thing that you're going to base over $100 million investment on. It's like, this is the underpinning of that. Are there any adults in the room? Is there anyone? Is there anyone, a Chewy CEO, that can say, listen, this is not a good idea, but it's too late. It's too late. You want to talk about this other NFT news?
Yeah, holy shit. So
it's also from Video Games Chronicle.
And it's hilarious because as you scroll through this article that I'm about to mention, there's literally a link to another article being like, NFT sales have declined 92% since their peak.
Oh, on this new article?
Yeah, on this new article.
Gotcha.
So Mega Man's Keiji Inafune is back with Beastroid, a range of NFTs. So Keiji Inafune, Is not the sole person on Mega Man, which a lot of people, I think, mistakenly assume.
He was part of the team,
but
earlier on.
Yes, but he really pushed himself. Like, when he did Mighty Number 9, for 20 years, he was, like, the sole producer. But he really pushed, like, the idea that he was the only guy. So people had faith in Mighty Number 9.
In a project that went horribly bad.
Yeah, in a project that went awful, 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 awful. And anyway, so he put out Mighty Number 9, horrible reviews. Now he's kind of co-opting the Mega Man style and look again with Beastroid. These NFTs are images of weird creatures with names like Hippo Launcher, Frill Dragon, Hyena Slasher. These sound like Mavericks from Mega Man X. That's what the names are. And that's essentially what these are. They're essentially Mega Man X Mavericks, and they're going to be NFTs. I don't trust or want to touch or even really be associated with anything this guy is doing. I feel like it's scammy. I feel like after Mighty Number 9, you know, he left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. I think it's actually kind of perfect that he's doing NFTs. Again, this is happening so late in the NFT game that I don't think this is going to be very popular. Although I do wonder if NFTs are having a slightly different time frame in Japan. Because in the past couple of months, we've really started to hear about all these Japanese companies and people getting on board. Like Square wants to be all fucking in on NFTs. So I don't know if, you know, the peak of interest hit later in Japan than it did here, or if it's really just a whole bunch of people trying to get into something that's already passed. I'm not certain.
So obviously this news was not met with positive.
No, this feedback. Is a great tweet. So this is from Mr. Feel, who actually I enjoy following this person for
Mr.
their takes.
Feel?
Mr. Feel's Wild Ride. I enjoy their takes.
Okay.
What did they but say? This is harsh. This is the one you linked. It's pretty fucked up that Inafune sank every Mega Man project at Capcom for years, nearly drove the company into the ground, left, and then immediately tried to sell himself as reviving Mega Man with the dirt from the backwoods burial still on his shoes.
Yikes!
Woo! That Yikes! Is... Oh, that is fucking razor sharp. And that was in response to a tweet that says, I still think it's immensely funny that Mighty Number 9, and I brought this up a little bit, Mighty Number 9 entirely banked on people believing Inafune was the sole creator of Mega Man.
So our pal Norm did a video about basically what happened with Mega Man Universe. Came out in the fall, the video. I had no idea. I didn't know. First of all, I didn't know, Norm, that you did this video. You got to tell me when these videos come out, buddy. It was a great video. He mismanaged that project into the fucking ground.
And it should have been so easy. A fucking build your own Mega Man. I mean, should have been a license to print money. And
yeah, the art style was terrible. It looked like a Flash game art. Yeah. It wasn't sprite-based.
Nope.
And they could have capitalized, because that was years still before Mario Maker. So they came out with something decently competent. It would have been a huge seller. It would have been a success.
Was that before Mario Maker?
That was announced like 11 or 12. That was a
oh yeah,
long
no, you're right.
Time
yeah,
ago.
God, time.
We're talking like pre Wii U or
sure, sure.
Yeah,
or around the launch.
So that got fucked. Then he leaves the company. That got canceled. Mega Man Legends 3 got canceled. They're going to do another Mega Man Legends, and I think they're going to do another regular side scrolling Mega Man. All the Mega Man properties got blown up partially because of Inafune. All the ones at the time 10 years ago. Remember yeah. It was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
It was like one after another. All these things are getting canceled.
Legends 3,
yeah.
Out. Mega Man Universe, out. I have no idea. I mean,
yeah, the other stuff, too. I think they had another side-scrolling thing that they were going to do.
I don't doubt it.
So that was bad. So, again, like, it really shows you where what the motivations are. And there was one tweet that says that Inafune is a businessman first. That's what I saw that. And how Mighty Number 9 was handled, I could see that, you know, because that was just
right.
Horribly mismanaged, you know, years late, and just was not to people's expectations at all, that game when it came out.
No, but I mean, obviously, like you said, a businessman first, because it was a very cynical cash grab
yes.
attempt to be like, look at me, I'm Mr. Mega Man, after destroying Mega Man.
Yeah. So that's unfortunate. What's more unfortunate, you know, somebody just came out with Seth Green's Stolen Apes. And this is Schadenfreude, but so Seth Green got fish and had a lot of NFTs stolen. One was the Bored Ape, one of the most famous NFTs. It was supposed to be the star of a new show that they actually made a trailer for or were going to produce. And now technically, since he doesn't own that NFT anymore, he has no rights to do the show because he doesn't have the copyright to that ape anymore. You can't make this shit up. You can't make it up. It's trending. It's like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's incredible. This is the main tweet. Seth Green's Bored Ape NFT, which was set to star in its own animated show, was stolen through a phishing scam. Green no longer owns the commercial rights to the NFT, and thus the show cannot move forward. So the Bored Ape is one of those few ones where you get the copyright.
Fucking insane.
So that's one where you get the copyright to that ape. Isn't that nuts?
So another person I follow on Twitter that very important says, I can't explain what the difference is, but the story about Seth Green getting his ape stolen is just boring to me now. I'm post-ape. Need something new to feel entertained by. This schadenfreude is worn completely off. Because, I mean, I am kind of at that point. Like, it was great, but it's the same thing with the Amico for me. After a while, it's like, can this just fucking end?
But it's please? Not going to.
No.
Every single day, there's a scam or a grift with NFTs that makes it like, You can't believe there's that many marks in the world that are still into this, but there are. You're labeling yourself a mark for people to come steal your money, to steal your apes, or like that. It's people are licking their chops. You have all these like not even probably high level hackers that are now like potentially millionaires from people like this that are just like, it's free money. It's insane. It's like its own ecosystem now in a way. New NFT project comes. It's either a rug pulled by the creator, or there's a scam that happens, or someone gets their stuff stolen, or the marketplace shuts down because someone hacks it or does a flash loan and gains all the other NFTs. And it's like this, and people are putting real money into these things.
Another plug for Web3 is great on Twitter. A great account if you want to see just how bad and fucked up this is every single day.
So now you have Seth Green publicly pleading so the person that did the phishing one then sold it to someone else. Seth Green's now pleading for the person that bought it to give it back to them. Because there's no legal recourse. Because it's not regulated.
But that's what everyone wanted. So eat shit. You reap what you sow.
And now GameStop, going back to GameStop, they're now getting in on this action.
It's almost like a regulation is like, there's uses for them.
Yeah, there's uses for
so many fucking people, babies. You can't tell me what to do. Fucking live in society, asshole.
Imagine if someone robbed the bank where your money was held and like your money was just gone forever.
Yeah.
Thankfully, there's things in place where you get your money back when things like that happen.
Yeah. I wanted to be like the Wild West, bang bang.
The Wild West. I can't believe it. So he
shit heals.
Real quick before we end, Seth Green, who Frank literally ran into at Comic-Con, almost knocked him over. It's a funny story he told me one time. Released the trailer to this animated show after it was stolen. And like that, you imagine if you're in the production of the show, you're working on the show, you're in the production company, and you're like, what happened? We can't do this show anymore. We put all this time on it because you got fished and now it's gone. Like that was the basis for your show. Seth. And Seth, you did this to increase the value of your NFT, obviously.
Right.
And to increase the value of the other Bored Ape owners. It's a fucking grift.
Yep.
Seth. I'm not saying I had a huge amount of respect for Seth before. He did fine work, voice acting and things like that.
There's things I've liked that he's done, but this is definitely stupid.
This is awful.
It's dumb.
It's awful.
Dumb as shit. I thought I knew my dad better than anyone. One day we were chatting and I heard a story I had never heard before, and that got me wondering, how many other stories don't I know? That's why I got my dad's StoryWorth. StoryWorth is an online service that helps you and your dad or your father figure connect through sharing stories and memories and preserve them for years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your dad a thought-provoking question of your choice from a vast pool of possible options. Each unique prompt asks questions you've never thought of, like, what is one of your fondest childhood memories? Or have you ever feared for your life? One of the ones that I got was, talk about a childhood sport that you played. And honestly, I had never even thought about the sports my dad played when he was a kid. I've really enjoyed reading my dad's answers to those questions. I've discovered stories and memories I never heard about and learned new things about stories I thought I really knew. It got him to go into detail about some of the jobs he had when he was younger, working at like an independent grocery store, and I don't know. They're very interesting to me. After 1 year, StoryWorth will compile all the questions and stories, including photos that you can attach, into a beautiful keepsake book the whole family can share for generations. I really look forward to reading this, you know, 5-10 years down the line. Give all the fathers in your life a meaningful gift you can both cherish for years to come. StoryWorth. Right now, for a limited time, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/CU Podcast. That's StoryWorth.com/CU Podcast to save 10 on your first purchase. StoryWorth.com/CU Podcast.
If you have a small business, inflation isn't doing you any favors right now. It's harder than ever to stay profitable. If you're looking for a way to cut costs, mailing and shipping is a great place to start. Simply use stamps.com to mail and ship and get access to exclusive discounts and great rates on shipping from USPS and UPS. It's an easy way to keep more money in your pocket. Stamps.com saves you time, money, and stress. For more than 20 years, stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. Stamps.com gives you access to all the post office and UPS shipping services you need right from your computer, and get discounts you can't find anywhere else, like up to 30% off USPS rates and 86% off UPS. No matter what business you're in, Stamps.com can help you save on shipping. Whether you're an office sending invoices, an Etsy shop sending your products, or a warehouse shipping out truckloads of orders, Stamps.com is the mailing and shipping solution for you. All you need is your regular computer and printer. No special supplies or equipment. You'll be up and running in minutes, printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send. Start mailing and shipping with Stamps.com and keep more money in your pocket every day. Sign up with promo code CUPODCAST for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code CUPODCAST. Ian, we got a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU Podcast. You go, a little money changes hands. You get the weekly video, full video podcast. You get writings by me. I'm working on one. My brain hurts. You get bonus episodes.
You get the full video of us, and then you get to vote on these polls.
That's right.
And no NFT early access yet. We're going to work on that in the future.
Yeah.
In second place, defending retro games that most people dislike, 42%. Stronger showing. I reward it a little bit. First place, Ian, we don't talk about this sort of game that often. The all-time favorite racing games. I know which one you're going to say.
Well, I have two, and I'm not sure which one you're thinking it is. But first, yeah, so I was looking, I was browsing Steam the other day, and this week they're currently doing, and this is not a promotion or an advertisement, but there's a racing game sale going on Steam. So while we were chatting, I went to my computer and it was on the racing game sale page, and we needed a topic. And I was like, how about racing games? Because truthfully, when I think about some of my favorite all-time games, I'm talking games that I would put in my top 10, top 15, top 20. There's a couple of racers in there that would be very high up, but I don't think of myself necessarily as, I guess, a racing game fan, even though I clearly am. It's funny because I have no interest in cars in real life, but racing games, love them. So for me, I think probably top five. There's going to be two. Ridge Racer Type 4 and Wipeout 3.
Okay. Oh, Wipeout. Okay.
Yeah, Wipeout is one of my favorite series. And both of those are great, not just for the racing, but the presentation in racing games often tends to be extremely slick. And I usually like it. I mean, it's showy. Races are showy to begin with. Cars are showy. So the presentation for racing games is awfully, you know, pretty flashy. Ridge Racer Type 4 has a really great, like, late 90s graphic style to it. Really good, like a great soundtrack, house, deep house, tech house type stuff. And not only is it fun to play, but it's just fun to experience. It's an extremely well designed game. And then Wipeout for me, especially the third one, that could not have come at a better time. I feel like there was no game that was more targeted to my specific tastes. It's, you know, hovercraft racing, so it's not real cars, but it's racing. The sense of speed is extremely fast in those games when you start playing on the higher circuits. And Wipeout was famous for bringing in real electronic music artists and DJs for the soundtracks.
Okay.
At a time where, you know, rave culture and party culture was becoming a very big thing.
Oh, yeah. Late 90s electronic music. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, like the first Wipeout soundtrack is well known for having, you know, Prodigy on there, Future Sound of London, Dune, I think, is on there. And it's great. The combination of the artwork, the cold futuristic setting. Cold is, I think, key to Wipeout. When they try to warm it up, I like it less. They even did, they even had the design done, I think, for the first two games, maybe not the third, done by the Designers Republic, which was a great graphic design house. I fucking loved it. That did all sorts of artwork for Warp Records, Square Pusher, Aphex Twin. They were very, very big in kind of defining what rave culture looked like in the late 90s. So, I mean, just as a whole package, but also as like a really interesting of the moment, like cultural snapshot of a mm-hmm. scene, Wipeout is hard to beat. And it's extremely difficult. Like, it's one of those games where when you get good at Wipeout, you feel like you've achieved something, especially on the
because,
higher.
Just because it's so challenging?
It's very challenging. It uses an interesting air brake setup where there's two brakes. You have a brake on the left and a brake on the right. So it's really interesting.
Really technical?
Yeah, like when you're going through chicanes and stuff like that, it's so, yeah, when I got good enough at Wipeout 3 when it originally came out to play on, like, the Phantom Speed class and get good at it. Yeah, one of the few times where I felt really accomplished in a video game.
Okay. Real quick, I have to, like, discount stuff probably because it's not... I mean, Mario Kart's racing, but to me, it's not, like, pure racing.
I don't count
battle Mario racing Kart. Or party racing.
It's fun. I love it, but yeah. it has its own subgenre. Kart racing is its own subgenre for a reason.
Yeah, so I don't count that as pure racing. Pure racing means, like, you know, to me, almost no gimmicks. You're racing.
You can have Wipeout has weapons, but I need the speed and I need the weapons to feel like they are secondary, not primary
speed.
In Mario Kart, and I do it with my friends sometimes. But if you race with nothing on, it's not fun. There isn't that jockeying for position that you get with actual racing games.
Sure. Honorable mention before I get into it, because this is one I don't have a huge amount of experience with, but it's good. And the arcade game is still incredible if you have to find a sit-down one. The Star Wars Episode I Pod Race.
Oh, it's great, man. That game is so good.
Really, really good sense of speed. It has the levers in the arcade.
It's fun.
You're doing the sit-down arcade?
Yeah, man. We had one in Buffalo at two of the arcades. It's so good.
Horrible movie. Great game.
It's a
great
amazing.
Game.
I even like the N64 game, to be honest with you.
I don't have a huge experience with that, but the different levers made it interesting.
Yeah.
With that.
So cool.
So I have four, and they're all, to me, different types of games, and I like them for different reasons. I'll start with probably my all-time favorite sort of racing arcade game. It's silly. It's great. Single screen, Super Off-Road. The reason I like Super
Off-Road. Oh, it's awesome.
The reason I like Super Off-Road, and I love Super Sprint, but Super Off-Road sort of perfected that single screen overhead, you know, racing game.
Super Sprint's really fun for how clean and pure of an idea it is.
Yes, and for the controls.
Yep.
And it's basically what Super Off-Road is based on. Super Off-Road is like just a little bit silly. The races are quick. You have to be technical with how you do it. And there's the nitro to give you the boost to catch up. It's not too much. You can spam the nitro, but you run out. You have to upgrade your car. It's smarter overall to invest in the races after the races for your engine and tires and shocks and stuff. And there's also the risk reward in the game where, like, if you want to veer out of the way to get the nitro or even go back a little bit and get the money bag and come by, there's a little bit to that makes it interesting.
They do a good job of placing the items in places that you really have to think about. All right, do I have a line going even right now that I can successfully swoop in and grab that?
Now, there isn't a huge variety of races. You go, you know, they reverse each race. So there's really, what is there? There are, I think, six, so it's really 12 or something like that. And the Super Nintendo one adds a bunch more tracks.
I think it adds the track pack from the arcade. I think
that's basically what, yes, that's what it does. That's right. That's right. It was in the arcade, but you almost never find machines that have the track pack. I was never come across them.
Aero Club Dino Bar.
Okay.
Yep.
So you get more. You get a lot more tracks. So that, and plus that's the one that's the first time I saw like that. Because I never saw like the stand-ups, like Sprint or Super Sprint multiplayer ones ever as a kid. But I saw that every arcade had that in the late
90s. I love the animations in that game, too, when the trucks are bouncing around.
Yeah, it's great.
It's fun to watch.
Yes, it's a nice, lovely little game. Cruising USA, we're going to stick on the arcades. Cruising USA, to me, sort of defined sort of that next leap into like arcade games like in the mid-90s to me. With like Killer Instinct, you know the Mortal Kombat 2s and games like that, where it's like, okay, we're taking this leap forward into like digital imagery of real people and games and stuff like that. I remember Cruising USA being at, I always bring it up, Casino Pier and Seaside, because Casino Pier was the first arcade every year I see what was new, and they had four player Cruising USA set up there, and it was great. You figured out, oh, you can get the police car and you can get the school bus and the secrets in there. But it was pick up and play, automatic transmission or manual. And the manual was fairly easy to use and fun.
Yeah, I used the manual on that from time to time, and I almost never do.
Great theme song. You had Bill Clinton with Babes in the Hot Tub at the end. It was just a goofy, fun game. And obviously, you know, there's probably diminishing returns on the two sequels, but they were fun for what they were.
They are great arcade racers, but they are 100% games that, personally, I feel, shine so well in the arcade,
sure,
and don't translate home super well, because you realize kind of how simple it is when you're playing in the arcade and the music's blasting and you're sitting in the cabinet. It's a lot more fun, but when you strip it down and take it home, it's a little less spectacular.
When you're literally racing to keep your 50 cents or dollar, versus you got to be in first place to keep it going. And the N64 port was not a great port. I review that certain N64 guidebook that'll come out at some point in the future. Midnight Club. I brought up Midnight Club a lot before.
I never really played it, but I know a lot of people love it.
Midnight Club is interesting because it's sort of the subculture of, street racing and stuff like that, which I'm not into. I'm not a big, Fast and the Furious guy, but it's interesting just on its surface, racing in cities at night. It looks beautiful. You have like the reflections of things off the streetlights and the sheen on the ground. And I only have a lot of experience with the first Midnight Club, which is, God damn it, 20 years old at this point. Jeez, Rockstar, do another Midnight Club at some point. They had, four of them? They had the dub edition. They had, 1, 2, and 3. But it's a great game, Ian, because, there's some leveling up of you're racing for money and things like that. And there is customization in the cars. But the multiplayer, even on one screen, the capture the flag and basically was like tag, was so fun. Just to not get by a car and to stay away. Like, there was something so fun about that. And even, this was 20 years ago, the cities were not huge, but they were fairly big for what they were. Fairly big. Well, I think the original, God damn it, you had New York and London. Was there a third one in the first one? I forget. I looked that up. And I might be wrong. But, it was just a fun experience. Controls were outstanding with the handbrake turns and stuff like that. They really got it. And while I'm on handbrake turns, Driver was a really good game, but that's not a straight racing game, but Driver was great.
Difficult, too.
Driver was one of the most realistic, besides stuff like Gran Turismo, one of the more realistic simmy type of games on game like that, where you had to kind of learn how to drive for real with that.
I also want to just mention real quick, before I forget it, definitely worth a mention, the San Francisco Rush series was a lot of fun. It does not get brought up as often as the Cruisin' series, but particularly San Francisco Rush 2049.
The sequel?
The home version
was
great because it had the stunt course because in San Francisco Rush 2049, if your car did loops or flips or rotated, you'd get points for it. And they created a whole stunt course in that game that was honestly like a big skate park. You could just drive the car around and get it. It was a lot of fun. I actually probably played that mode more than anything.
Did you have that N64 or no?
Dreamcast.
Yeah, Dreamcast. Well, Cruisin' did add little tricks, but it wasn't as integrated as that. But you could do slides and things like that in the later two games to varying degrees of success, which I wrote about. I reviewed all three Cruisin' games in the N64 book. Finally, F-Zero. And I'll stick with the original because that's one I have the most amount of experience with. Obviously, the one on N64 is a masterpiece. I think the spoilers, I think the reviewer gave it 5 stars on the N64.
Which one?
F-Zero on N64.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's a, my God, I've been playing that again on the Switch. It's amazing. It's so good.
And I have zero experience with the GameCube one, by the way. Can we get another F-Zero game, Nintendo?
Also very good.
Can we get another F-Zero game? Holy shit, we told this before. You can come out with the F-Zero game. So anyway, the original on Super Nintendo. The reason that game is so good, and the only thing that keeps it back from, like, utter perfection is that there's no two players on it. Other than that, it's a perfect game. The sense of speed on a sprite-based game like that.
On Super Nintendo?
On Super.
Yes. No, it's incredible.
I don't think, in my head, there's another game from that era that the sense of speed you get, you really think you're going hundreds of miles an hour. And that effect is almost literally from the force field on the edges of the bubbles, that they're bubbles.
Yeah.
That, like, they go by so quickly and smoothly that you're like, holy shit, I'm going super fast.
No, it feels like you're screaming in that game.
Yes. And
the N64 version even more so. Like, it just... And the GameCube one, they really... Those games in Wipeout on the higher levels really nail, like, that sense of speed that genuinely feels uncontrollable. Like, yes. Holy shit, then, I gotta slow down.
And then at least, I'm not familiar with the Wipeout as much, but when you hit the barriers, you get bounced the hell back.
Sure.
Like, it's very kinetic feeling. Like, you're feeling like this is really that quick. Like, you're really going through a course, and it's not just a Nintendo trick that, you know, basically you're stationary and the course is moving around you because of Mode 7, basically. It's brilliant. The controls are super on point, and I really appreciated when I reviewed it. It was the first game I reviewed for the Super Nintendo book. The first one I played.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I really got to appreciate the controls more, learning how to drive with all four cars. Originally, I was only using the heavy red car, the one with the best top speed. But then I realized, like, oh, no, Captain Falcon's car, it's a good racer if you know how to control it. Like, every car...
I think his car is supposed to be considered, like, the most rounded.
The blue one?
Yeah, blue Falcon.
But every car controls differently, and you have to learn how to drift with them and how to brake beforehand. And I really got to appreciate that more, you know, 25 years later after I first got it as a kid. I was like, this is probably a better game than I gave it credit for.
It's great.
And the soundtrack is amazing. The soundtrack is, like, I mean, amazing.
It was a license we didn't know at the time. And yes. There was no multiplayer. And I think that, you know, was kind of a detriment for it earlier.
Versus something like Mario Kart. But it's obviously...
Which came later and was obviously way more popular.
But it still was a million seller. Rue has his six-pack that was unopened.
Those things are everywhere. Yes. We got multiple of those at Luna.
Hey, Rue, you should have flipped them. You could have got some money for me. You wouldn't let me have one at MAGFest. Love you, Rue. All right, that's it for this. That was a fun one. You know, racing games are great.
It was good.
This portion of the CU Podcast is brought to you by HelloFresh. Get mouth-watering seasonal recipes and fresh, pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh makes cooking at home easy, fun, and affordable. No matter what's going on in the world, everyone's got to eat. That's why HelloFresh is here to make eating better and easier. No grocery stores, no stressful meal planning, just everything you need to prepare wholesome, delicious meals, all delivered to your door.
With 50 weekly options, including a rotating selection of items at the HelloFresh market, there's plenty of delicious dishes to choose from, no matter the occasion. HelloFresh has options for everyone, including family-friendly, fit and wholesome, and quick and easy meals, so there's something to please even the pickiest eater at your table. Stuff like the honey barbecue pork cutlets is great.
Oh, it's delicious.
And if you're really into, like, shellfish and whatnot, this garlic herb butter shrimp and lobster tails is fantastic. HelloFresh recipes feature produce sourced directly from U.S. farmers and picked at peak ripeness. It goes from the farm to your front door in under a week, which means their spring menu features the season's freshest flavors. HelloFresh will help you save time, money, and stress. With HelloFresh, step-by-step recipes are super easy to follow, and the ingredients are pre-portioned, which will help cut out waste and save on prep time. HelloFresh is cheaper than grocery shopping, even at full price. The pre-portioned ingredients mean you don't waste money on excess food. It's literally one of my favorite things about HelloFresh. HelloFresh will help you reach your goals. They offer veggie, pescatarian, fit and wholesome meals, and it makes it quick and easy to stick to your goals. Wholesome recipes make it easy to eat well without sacrificing flavor. Maintain your goals and feel good about your food choices with HelloFresh. And it doesn't get in the way of a busy day. Stay on track with simple recipes and fresh pre-portioned ingredients that cut out meal prep and trips to the grocery store. HelloFresh helps you eat more sustainably. HelloFresh is a streamlined supply chain that reduces greenhouse gas emissions compared to grocery shopping. Plus, in a partnership with Plastic Bank, HelloFresh prevents 10 million bottles from entering the ocean every year. HelloFresh cuts down on food waste by at least 25% compared to grocery shopping.
Get some HelloFresh today. Use our link in the description or go to HelloFresh.com and use code POGPATNESMAY16 for up to 16 free meals plus 3 surprise gifts across 6 HelloFresh boxes plus free shipping. HelloFresh, America's favorite meal kit. We got voicemails, Ian.
We do got some voicemails.
You go to anchor.m/SCU podcast. You go, you leave us something. 20 seconds is the sweet spot. You don't have to... You don't have to tell us if we're great or whatever. You can tell us if you hate us. I appreciate that. And just, you know, just say, hey, this is my question. Here we go.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Michael from Michigan. Pat, I just want to thank you for coming to the Midwest Gaming Classic. It was a lot of fun meeting you. I was the one that was wearing the Double Jump shirt and hat. And my question is for you, Pat. I just wanted to ask you, what was your favorite thing about the Midwest Gaming Classic? Thanks again for all you do. And I would love to see you next year at the Midwest Gaming Classic again.
Besides rooming with Norm, the best thing about the weekend, I really liked my first time real at a convention in the Midwest, upper Midwest at least. The people were nice and friendly, that Midwestern sort of hospitality.
Midwest vibe.
Midwest vibe was very chill and relaxed. And then the German restaurant was amazing. I don't know if I brought it up to Ian before.
Yes.
The German food was amazing. And it just it felt like it was just a different culture there. A lot of people were at bars. We went down on Saturday night, the four of us, me, Norm, Kelsey, and Kelsey's friend went for the German food. And the bar, everyone was watching the Brewers. Everyone was like having a good time. Just felt like really relaxed.
Nice.
Like downtown Milwaukee. It's a nice area.
Hi, Pat and Ian. This is Gordon, a former Canadian phoning from East Sussex in England. I just wanted to say I was watching Zodiac on the weekend, and Pat, you are a spitting image for Mark Ruffalo's Inspector Dave Toshi. We've not watched it recently. Yeah.
Great movie. You have to see
watch that. Out for that. I was also wondering, do you think there's any relation between Tommy Tallarico's Intellivision Amico and Mr. Majorium's Wonder Emporium? Do you think that the branding was entirely based on a ridiculous rhyme? Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Being that nothing was thought about this project at all, I would not put it past it. That was part of the reasoning put into the name.
No, I mean, obviously his extreme Italian pride is the reason why he chose an Italian word. But the Tommy Tallarico Amico, certainly a bonus that I'm sure he loved after the fact, if it wasn't intentional.
Hey, guys, it's Tim from Minnesota. I just wanted to talk about how you guys feel about shutting games down. I'm a senior systems architect, and we cannot keep games around forever. They run old hardware, old software, and unfortunately, we need to shut them down. We need people to patch and maintain them. There's security vulnerabilities, all sorts of things going on. So while we would like to keep them forever, we simply cannot. Regardless of if they're on PC, Xbox, PlayStation 3, they all run on computer servers, virtual machines usually, or something of the nature. And unfortunately, sometimes there's security issues, sometimes the software isn't supported, they're running on all sorts of reasons. So we can't keep them running forever, unfortunately, and oftentimes it actually does cost us money if we want to keep them running. There's been servers running that have 5 users a week.
All right, I get it, Tim, but you know, you don't want to white knight too hard for, what was that, Ubisoft we're talking about there? Because like they were shutting down games that were like 4 years old, the servers. Like, it wasn't just stuff that was 15 years old. It was stuff more recent. So I guess it gets to the argument of I don't know how it works. I don't entirely. But if a game is 3 years old, wouldn't that tech be on something a little bit newer than a game from the 2000s? Wouldn't that be something a little bit newer? So I don't know how it lines up entirely, how the risk assessment, risk reward is put out there.
Right.
I understand it costs money to run servers.
Sure.
I'm not dumb. You know, you need maintenance.
I guess I oftentimes get angry when games get shut down. It's not so much at the company, as long as it's had a decent run. It's more, I'm concerned about the preservation for a game that is so
sure,
reliant on the server. And if that's getting backed up, and it's getting, and probably these days, I'm sure it's happening more and more, that's getting saved, I'm less concerned. But
I mean,
yeah,
if someone out there that works for like a company like Ubisoft wants to say, hey, Pat, this is the average cost per game versus number of users to keep this going per year, so I have a round number. Absolutely. Let me know. Is it a few hundred dollars? Is it a thousand?
Right.
Like, let me know what that cost is for all that, for basically overall maintenance. I would love to know that.
Ian, Pat, it's Tommy again from Sheffield in the United Kingdom. Big shout out to all the Tommies out there. We're not all bad. I'm a Patreon subscriber. I even helped my neighbor with his bin collection today. We call trash bins in the United Kingdom. We also call the Super NES the SNES. I'm really sorry, Pat, but we do, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. Speaking of the SNES, Batman Returns, I feel it's one of the most underrated titles the Super NES.
I like
it. Super NES library, sorry, excuse me. I feel like it's better than Final Fight. I feel like Streets of Rage 4 borrowed some of the movesets. And I'd love to know your thoughts on that particular game. Love the podcast. Big kisses.
It's not better than Final Fight.
Better than Super Nintendo Final Fight.
Did I review that?
I think it's fun, and it's an overlooked
game. It's interesting.
It's not great.
It's interesting.
The problem
is, it's solid.
I think any beat 'em up, I feel like, should have two players, but at least Batman was designed around one player.
Sure. I might have given it 3 stars. I think I reviewed that, but God, we're talking, it's better than average. It's interesting because it has like, you can block in it, and it's not the standard beat 'em up at the time.
Right,
it's interesting.
No, it's unique,
and there's weapons, obviously, which is good. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Cindy from Tacoma, Washington. You've mentioned a lot in the podcast over these past few weeks about your love for Funhouse, and yes, that is a fantastic show. My question to you is: what are your thoughts on the two other Stone Stanley massive housed game shows in either Legends of the Hidden Temple or one of my personal favorites, Shop Till You Drop? Anyway, enjoy the podcast. Thanks, and have a great day.
I love Shop Till You Drop. I used to watch that as a kid, and I went back and looked at a couple like things just to remember the flow of the game. I used to love that dumb show just because it was like a mall setup. I loved it.
I loved both of those. Shop Till You Drop was probably the one I liked a little bit more. Legends of the Hidden Temple, here's my deal. I love the concept of Legends of the Hidden Temple, and I like the temple at the end. The problem is the way the game is designed, you really kind of need to get all of the pendants of life if you want to beat the last temple. And there are ways, depending on who wins, like the physical challenge games, to only end up with one pendant or one and a half pendants. And it makes it extremely, extremely difficult. So unless one of the teams just sweeps the other team,
it's harder.
It's way harder.
See, so I don't like that concept then.
Yeah.
Because like,
well, I like the idea. I just don't like how that plays out.
I didn't like the fact that they had like the guys dressed up and like they would capture them inside the final temple, or whatever. I don't think I ever saw. I didn't watch it as much as Funhouse. Funhouse was not easy to win. Funhouse.
No, it wasn't.
I saw teams win Funhouse. I don't think I ever saw someone when I was watching win Hidden Temple. I don't think I ever saw it.
It happened.
It was rare.
But it was like if they had all the tokens, as long as they put the fucking monkey together the right way, they would win. And if you didn't have the tokens, you didn't win. One that I do want to mention real quick, though, that was also the big set kind, but much earlier, Finders Keepers.
I don't remember that one.
You don't remember Finders Keepers?
Let me see that.
Okay.
Finders Keepers.
Interesting.
Finders, what was it on?
It was on Nickelodeon for at least part of the time.
It might be one of those things where once I see it, I'll know it, but...
But it was, I want to say it was like early 80s.
Early 80s?
Yeah.
Nah. 87.
Oh, okay.
The early 80s, and it was just you can't do that on television and Turkey TV and out of control. It was on for a year only.
Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense. It was probably a very expensive game show to host because they set up like a whole... They set up multiple rooms that you had to go through and like tear apart to find shit.
Two seasons, 195 episodes total, 130 Nickelodeon, 65 in syndication.
God, they really cranked that shit out.
Well, that's the type of thing that they probably filled like
multiple episodes in a day. Right.
Yeah. They do that with Jeopardy, don't they? They do multiple in a day.
Yes.
They do like a whole week.
Yep.
Sometimes, like in one day, they just do a little rest in between. I don't think I remember that one, Ian.
I used to watch a lot of game shows, man.
Everything on Nickelodeon when I was a kid.
I'm surprised you don't remember it.
No. Maybe something I'll look once I look up on YouTube, I might remember it. Because like something like Shop Till You Drop, I was like, I don't remember anything about it. Then once I saw the episode, I'm like, okay, I remember
if
everything.
If you look
about
up
it.
The end, like the big end run at the end of Finders Keepers, you'll probably know it.
Okay.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Andy from Woodridge, Illinois. I don't know if you've seen, but PCS Collectibles has made high-end statues of Jean-Claude Van Damme and Bolo Yang from Bloodsport. I was just wondering, how much would you pay for a Frank Dukes, Ray Jackson statue of them playing Karate Channel?
Wow. A lot. I don't think I ever would buy something like this. I want to buy... Oh, sorry to cut you off there, Andrew. I want to buy that, and I don't ever like something... If someone made... Like literally a little Karate Gym cabinet, and they're playing it. I would spend money on that.
Yep.
I would buy that.
I would, and I already have the Frank Dukes on the way for the
this thing. He's doing the kick.
Yep.
So that's
pre-ordered for me.
So that's the how many other ones do they have?
I have not seen the Bolo Young. No, it's official. I have not seen the Bolo Young. If there is one, it's probably not out yet, but I will be getting it.
So that's official because this one on eBay
of
him jump kicking was not official. This little figurine, that's just someone made, I guess.
That I don't know.
But okay. Yeah, that's a little 3D printed thing. So okay, is this the first official statue of Bloodsport that we know about? Like first official figurine statue? How did I not know about this before?
Oh my God.
10.5 inches tall? Nice.
So I think he was talking about the sideshow ones. My bad.
The sideshow big ones?
This Bolo Young is amazing. It's a 1/3 scale statue.
What?
$975.
Sideshow?
Yeah. Just type in sideshow Bolo Young.
And there's no Van Damme?
If there is. I'm sure there is, but
you can get, oh my God, Ian, there's one with two of them.
Oh wow.
There's one with him. From how he looks in
Enter the Dragon.
That is brilliant. Wow, that looks just like him.
Yep.
$975.
It's great though.
Good to see some
autograph edition, huh?
Good to see some Bloodsport merchandise
yep.
coming here, besides like the rare albums and such. Things like that. Alright, we'll do a few more here.
Only 50 of them.
Oh, they only made 50 of the $1,000 ones?
Yep.
Okay, I got to read this because this was the message left. You can like do like a title of it. Pat, do you read these messages' names? It's Vox Andra, and I put my name in here so you know what to expect. But I think you see my email anyway, which also says Vox Andra. Or are these voicemails just like a total potluck, and you have no idea what's about to get blasted into your ear? Makes sense, you. And then it goes, okay, it's their actual message.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. It's Vox Andra from New Jersey. Did you guys like how I timed that last voicemail submission so I'd end up on voicemail episode 69? Pretty nice, right? Anyway, I got an interesting question this time, depending on your answers. You ever just invent a guy in your head that you just don't like just for the sake of making fun of this hypothetical person? For example, I like inventing retro YouTubers that'd be like, yo, this is Vinny Bag of Donuts from youtube.com/Vinny's Fat Sack, here today to talk about how Mega Man 2 is better than Mega Man 3, because 3 came out after my parents got divorced. That's why Indie Creates had no slide in 9 and 10, because they knew that seeing Mega Man slide just reminds me of that skank-ass bitch sliding into my family's life, breaking up everything and denying me the childhood I deserve. That's why sliding sucks and Mega Man 2 is the best.
I feel like that person's real.
By the way, I didn't check to see if that's a real channel, so that could get awkward. Also, remember that you said to keep the voicemails under 30 seconds, so this time I made...
Okay. Jeez, sweet Lord. I was going to say, like Ian said, like almost every single type of person you think of exists on YouTube.
Yes.
Almost every single type of person.
It's true. So I have in my head, and I was actually inventing this person earlier when we were talking about NFTs.
I don't invent people in my head to make fun of. I don't do that.
While we were talking about NFTs, I was imagining a guy who only wears football jerseys, who thinks that it's going to be his big break, and his favorite restaurant is Applebee's.
That's so specific, Ian.
I know.
I'll do like two more here.
Hey, guys. This is Dan from New Jersey.
Brother!
What's your favorite memory from playing a game inebriated? My example would be smoking a joint with one of my buddies, and we played Sound Shapes on the PS3, and it was an amazing time. Thanks. Love the podcast.
The day that I realized that LSD made me better at shooters, I was in high school. I was tripping my balls off on like 2 to 3 hits of Spider-Man acid. And
Spider-Man acid?
Yeah, it had Spider-Man's face on the blotter. Very, very powerful stuff. And I got from stage one in R-Type to stage seven in R-Type, which I believe is the last level, on one credit. I shit the bed at level seven. I was not able to beat the game, but I have never, ever been able to repeat that in my life.
Wow. Have I ever drunkenly played a game like that? I almost count me being punch drunk on the past marathons with, you know, going 36 hours without sleep and being all goofy.
Yeah, sleep and deprivation. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that almost counts. Us singing Sunday Funday while like up for almost 2 days, that probably counts.
I'll let it pass.
Something like that. Or me, you know, raving about how much I hate Mega Man off of no sleep. You know, the classic hits from past marathons. And then yelling at Rue, because I'm again, every time we play Back to the Future, we take shots of Rue for saying it's a shooter. You know, stuff like that. People still come up to conventions and bring that up.
Really?
Back to the Future, being a shooter, just for fun.
Oh, yeah, that joke is good.
Oh, that's evergreen.
Hey, guys, this is Don from Minneapolis. So I promised myself I would never ask a question about Tommy Tallarico, because I just don't care. But for some reason, I found myself looking at his wiki page, and under personal life, it says, besides video games and music, Tallarico is an obsessive baseball and Spider-Man fan and collects balsamic vinegar.
What?
So my question is this. What?
There's no accounting for taste. I'm not going to take a shot at him for collecting something weird.
I collect weird stuff. But to the point, if you don't cook or you're unaware, balsamic vinegar is definitely one of those things like wine or specialty salts or olive oils in particular
that you can get
really, really deep into. For all the shit that I can say negative about Tommy Tallarico, honestly, his balsamic vinegar collection is the only thing I would want to talk to him about.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you go to like Barron's, they do like there's tons and tons of like balsamic vinegars and like metal containers, okay. And there's tons of olive oils too. And really, it's like a big. It's how you eat the bread. You dip it in a little olive oil. You dip it in a little balsamic vinegar.
You mix it up a little bit.
And there's strawberry kinds. There's mint. Like there's all sorts.
So there's mouth is watering. Even in passing, you can do a bread tasting with the oil.
Well, you can't really know, but you can buy the stuff there for that. And sometimes they do have, before pandemic, they did have like little croutons laid out that you could use to sample some of it.
That sounds incredible.
It was good.
You want to check in with somebody?
Let's check in with someone.
I feel like this is not going to go over well because we did not do like a lot of game topics this time out. This did we? Did we talk about like actual video games?
I don't know. Who cares
For this? Well, I don't know. A YouTube audience. All right, we'll check.
So don't tell them.
Hey guys, Tommy here. As you probably know, I was involved in a little accident with the Holoride, which really wasn't my fault because those 13 cars just came out of nowhere. And those 7 pedestrians didn't have the light either, okay? But one of them's sharing my hospital room, actually. How you doing over there, Father Kelly?
Oh, shut up, will you, boy?
Okay, I think he's still mad at me. You know, Jesus would want you to forgive me right now.
You're gonna see Jesus if you don't shut your face, boy.
Wow, I think that means he wants to kill me. I don't think a priest is allowed to do that, but anyway. I heard that Ian was having some health problems too, but once again, he just wouldn't die, so I guess we're just going to have to keep doing this, but whatever. Thank you to everyone who sent me flowers, and fuck you to everyone who sent me RBI baseball stickers. Bye. Anyway.
You know you can get RBI baseball stickers at ultimatenintendo.com to send to whoever you want. Well, you know, I hope you recuperate there, Tommy. He sounded a little more subdued besides the fuck used.
Yes.
A little more subdued than normal there. And I hope Father Kelly comes around. I really hope Father
Me too. Comes around. Man of the salt.
Man of the cloth?
Man of the cloth.
Man of the salt.
Man of the salt. Salt of the earth, man of the cloth. There we go.
Man of the salt. That's a new thing.
Yeah. Man of the salt. All right. Bye.
All right. That's it for the CU podcast. We had a good time.
That was a good
week.
One.
I'll cobble this together, and it was fun time.
Just feeling a little spunky.
You're a little spunky today. You had good energy today. Maybe from that the Squatch soap. Dr. Squatch gave you some good energy.
Squatch energized me.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we'll see you later.
Bye.